Tonight on the Guy at the Movies podcast, we are joined by Kurt of I Am Kurti Mo and Top 5 Film Dive. And we have to discuss the Shazam trailer that was very light on dragons, guys. So a lot to discuss there when it comes to DC burning off a few of their films before they actually announce what the future looks like. But we'll dive into that and a whole lot more after this. Hayden.
Everyone is part of the family at this point.
It used to be my fan fiction idea that I had. So this movie was garbage.
What is this? You are a monster beyond all belief.
Put them all in the thing and let them do the thing. You know what I mean?
How?
You're lucky to have me back.
You're never gonna get 60 million people because you're not a Super Bowl. Shut up.
That's so chaotic.
Welcome to the Guy at the Movies podcast, and I think the anniversary, Sean, of you freaking out about the Oscars and their ratings. Maybe a couple more weeks here, but
pretty close to it. That the epic freakout of all time.
Oh my God, you went off. People are always like, "What's he talking about there?" I was like, "Oh, you know, the Oscars,
the Oscars ratings,
just the Oscars." Kurt, thank you so much for joining us. We're very happy to have you for episode 130 here. How are you doing?
I'm good, fellas. Good morning. Thank you so much for the invite. I've been looking forward to this all week. I love listening to you guys. We always have some fun banter online, so it's fun to get it on record. Recording, and we can beat each other up and have proof of it when we get into the Eternals discussion. So
yes, and I will block you as soon as we're done. So everything will be great. Everything will be great. We do have some stuff to dive into today. We definitely need to get to the Oscar noms. Sean, I know you have a lot of opinions here. We were talking as they were coming out that morning.
I love that, like, we don't talk about anything specific, but we just texted back, "Oh my God,
oh my God."
Like, there was nothing actually. Like, you actually, like, nailed specific things. Like, you, like, yelled out last names. I was just like, "Oh my God, oh my God."
It's literally all you did.
This is all I did the entire time.
And then we're going to get into some fun stuff here. There's been some articles around casting James Bond, and it seems like we're probably getting closer to an announcement of what the future looks like in terms of that casting. So we'll get there, but first we want to start off with Shazam! Fury of the Gods. Trailer 2 came out this week. And boys, I got to tell you, I hated this trailer so much.
Yeah. Okay.
I was not into it. I felt like it. Like, number one, they're very dragon heavy here, and someone online on YouTube was arguing with me, saying, you know, maybe, actually, I think it was Hugh.
It was
was saying maybe the dragon is, like, not the big end of the whatever. But it just seems like they showed us a lot of that and haven't showed us enough of, like, what the actual story and the conflict is, other than the Daughters of Atlas and Shazam and family going at it at Citizens Bank Park after the World Series. But Kurt, what was your thoughts on Shazam, the trailer that came out? I believe it was this past Thursday.
Yeah, I adored the first movie. Not just because I have very sentimental, like, hey, this was my first big, like, event as, like, a film critic in Toronto. It was very cool. Got to meet the whole, well, I shouldn't say got to meet the whole cast, get in the same room as the whole cast. So I have, like, a soft spot for this movie. Trailer looks god awful. I'll even agree with you. Awful. But it's just kind of like that, like, lighthearted DC that I think right now, like, I need a little bit of in my life, because there just seems like there's so much drama behind the scenes that's just like, oh, here, we're just gonna put this out here for everybody to just have some fun with. And very dragon heavy, like you said. I'd love to see Zachary Levi stick around. I hope that this is not his last foray as Shazam, but time will tell. Sean?
Yeah, sure. Like, I don't know. Like, I'll see it. Like, cool, whatever. Yeah. I think that, yeah, I absolutely loved the first one, but I loved how, like, I guess, for lack of a better word, intimate it was, where it was just like a fun little teen comedy. Yeah. This seems to expand, which all sequels do. They expand their world a little bit more, and usually that makes it a little bit more fun. But for this one, it's like, I really want to focus on the goofy antics that Shazam was into, like, in the first one. Like, the gag about him going to the strip club twice is truly hysterical. I don't think they're going to have those gags, and I'm worried it's just going to go a little bit further. Yeah, this trailer was pretty bad. I mean, it was one where they're just, you know, I try not to do this, and I think I've done this 2 weeks in a row. I usually try not to complain about a trailer giving away too much, but holy crap. Like, I'm seeing a lot of the third act in this puppy. I mean, hey, who knows? Maybe it is all in the first couple of minutes that we saw this stuff, but it seems like we're seeing the third act conflicts without really knowing what's going on. I was not really into it. I mean, I love that, like, the reaction online, someone said, you know, if this were like a Marvel trailer, then people would criticize all the pop culture references and the effects heavy. And I'm like, are we at a point where now Marvel is below DC? Like, is Marvel now the underdog? Because I don't think that's the case. But, like, do people hate Phase 4 that much?
Yeah, I don't know. This the discourse has been kind of interesting because I think a lot of people are still riding high on the first film, similar to what you two were saying about how much fun it is or was. And I totally agree with that. I really enjoy the first film, especially at the time that it came out. It was such a different vibe for DC. And I guess with Aquaman as well, those two both had a different vibe. Sean's favorite movie of all time, Aquaman.
Greatest movie of all time.
Yeah. Rightfully so, Sean. Rightfully so.
So it's interesting that we're getting both of them this year, although I don't know that Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom really does exist at this point.
I think they forgot to film it, and they're just, like, buying their time. They're, like, eating their way through the check. They're like,
we're going to be able to write this one off too, fellas. High fives.
Right. Like, James Gunn is like, we forgot to film it. Good luck.
Well, it will be interesting because, so you know, in DC, in terms of DC, we do have an announcement coming shortly about what the start of the new DC 10-year plan is going to look like from James Gunn and Peter Safran. James Gunn reconfirmed this past week that it's coming by the end of January, the end of January being this upcoming Tuesday.
Yep.
So we should be getting news soon. And it does sound like Zachary Levi, just based on some of the internet discourse that he's been involved in, may continue to be a part of this in some way, which I do think would probably be a smart move. And then, of course, Jason Momoa posted all that cryptic stuff last week saying how excited he was for the future and whatever that looks like. And I don't know. It's I'm like still – I love DC to death, but I'm still so burned by what's happened over the past couple of years that I'm nervous about, like, these – I mean, four movies this year, right? We have Shazam Fury of the Gods. We have Blue Beetle. We have The Flash, and we have Aquaman.
Yeah,
I'm worried that they're just burning a few of them off. Although Blue Beetle, I feel like, is the one that if it really flourishes, they can incorporate easily into the future. And maybe Shazam as well, because Shazam, aside from having the headless Superman in the first movie, hasn't really had any crossovers, even though Wonder Woman is rumored in this one. So I just don't know. I don't know what, like, how to contribute to this discourse other than being like, they're trying to get money, you know, blood from a stone this upcoming year. And then hopefully they have some plan moving forward.
I love the idea that James Gunn is really into Blue Beetle. He was like, of those four, which is the one that nobody knows about? Yeah, no, Blue Beetle. Yeah, like, that sounds good.
That's James Gunn.
That is 100% James Gunn.
That's the one we're going to run with, guys.
Everybody knows Aquaman. And forget those. Yeah.
That's part of the announcement this week. It's going to be like, everything centers around Blue Beetle. Yeah.
And Scrunchy Man.
Scrunchy Man.
He's a C character. It's a real person. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we do have Shazam coming out in March. Prior to that, in the superhero realm, we have Ant-Man and the Wasp coming out the week after the Super Bowl. So I'm sure we'll get another look during the Super Bowl of that. But
that'll be interesting if they decide to show something. Because, like, I'm sure there'll be a Super Bowl ad, but it's so close. Usually that's when they want to reveal new things. But yeah, you're right.
I think they'll probably do a big Guardians one during the Super Bowl.
Oh, God, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, Guardians is that first week of May, right? So,
yeah.
May 3rd, May 4th. So
they're pretty close by, which is crazy. Close.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, funny that you just said something about with Ant-Man. I presume your screening is going to be in a couple weeks for Ant-Man, Joe?
Yes.
Probably.
We did just get it scheduled.
You did just get it scheduled? Cool. Yeah, I just got tickets for it last week here in Toronto, and I'm excited. I'm very excited for it. I think it's going to be this, like, Phase 5, like, kickstart that it really needs right now, because people are really shitting on the MCU. So,
yeah. Yes, we shall see. I was seeing something on TikTok, and, you know, everything's true on TikTok, but it was an interview with the cast, and the person that was interviewing asked them about cameos and things that would make people say, oh, my God, and things like that, and asked Paul Rudd to rate it on a scale 1 to 10, and he pretty much said, like, something along the lines of, like, there's a few in there that are going to be tens for people or something like that. So cool. I really do. I mean, they've been building this up as the kickoff to Phase 5 and taking everything from Phase 4 and, you know, really ratcheting it up. So I'm hoping that this really delivers. I'm excited, though. I'm really excited for Ant-Man.
Yeah, so am I. So am I.
I just wish they would use a little bit more CGI.
Yeah, no, it seems like the backgrounds seem way too realistic. Like, I heard they did on-location shooting, but it's just like...
In the quantum realm.
The budget was insane. The taxes in the quantum realm are just terrible.
Yeah. Oh my god.
I told them they should have filmed it in Canada. I mean, there's a lot of write-offs, but I know.
The budget was insane and they had the quarantine for 35 days.
Not Kevin Feige.
Absolutely insane. All right, let's switch complete gears here and go to what we've been watching. And it's been a quiet week in terms of new releases, but one that did hit is the Jonah Hill, Kenya Barris written You People, which is kind of an updated take on Guess Who's Coming to Dinner in a way. Mm-hmm. But this stars Jonah Hill. Let me pull up the rest of the cast. Joy Louis-Dreyfus, Eddie Murphy, David Duchovny, Nia Long. And I'm forgetting the other woman. Nicole.
I just looked at it.
I just looked at it too. That's the worst. Lauren London.
Completely.
Lauren London. So, guys, let's start, Sean, with you. You watched You People in preparation for this pod. It was a film. What did you think?
That is kind of how I'm going to go with this one. I was not too jazzed about this one by the end. I was left pretty lukewarm. I think this is one of those things where I haven't done my review yet, but I'm probably going to grade it a C, but it's like my C of like, yeah, I don't really know what to do with this movie. So yeah. Like, look at a C. I think that, you know, it had this great cast, great talent behind it, really great talent. I think they were a little bit underutilized, especially Eddie Murphy, where there were points where I'm like, he is trying out his stand-up this special that's going to be on Netflix soon. Mm-hmm. Like from the first part, he was just like talking, like he was like doing observational comedy at the very beginning. I still liked it. I definitely enjoyed myself. And I said this off mic to you guys. I actually laughed harder at Shotgun Wedding, although I think Shotgun Wedding is probably a worse movie. But like it was, I think that this was an interesting kind of fun movie. I thought that like Jonah Hill was great. Eddie Murphy was great. Their chemistry was great. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is phenomenal as always. Like just, you know, absolute queen. I like that Kenya Barris, you know, the writer of Blackish and other things, but mainly Blackish, where he likes to have those uncomfortable conversations, mm-hmm. where they are not like social activism conversations or social justice conversations. They are to a certain degree, but then he pushes it a little further to make it more uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think that that kind of boundary pushing is always great, always welcome. And then I saw that a little bit here, not a lot here, but I still definitely enjoyed this movie, but I was a little bit let down, but my... Yeah, my expectations might have been a little bit too high, which is sort of unfair.
Agreed. Totally agree.
Yeah, that's interesting. I agree with actually everything you said, even though I think my rating is going to end up being higher than yours was or will be. What did you think, Kurt? I know you, I think I saw a B minus for you.
Yeah. Sean, I echo what you said, man. I was really entertained. There, I have not laughed this hard at anything in recent year. The Las Vegas stripper cocaine scene, and I'm talking like I was on the floor and my wife's just looking at me as I have tears rolling down my eyes. I couldn't catch my breath. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in a movie, and I can't remember laughing that hard at anything lately. It's just like it felt like more like a series of montages rather than like an actual piece together film. And I get it. Like Kenya's done so many sitcoms now, Blackish, Black as Fuck, which was on Black AF, sorry. Which was on Netflix.
Oh, that was a great one,
which I really enjoyed, like really enjoyed. And that's one of those shows where Kenya takes those like really uncomfortable conversations and just stretches it a little bit further. And we saw shades of that in this, especially at the dinner table. When Julia Louis-Dreyfus and David Duchovny and then Nia Long and Eddie Murphy are kind of going back and forth, which was also another, I think, like standout moment from the movie. I enjoyed it. I was entertained. I think I might have put this on like a very big pedestal to start in my brain, but it wasn't bad. I gave it a B minus. I guess I gave it just a little higher than yours, Sean, man. Like I dug a few parts of this. It was very formulaic. We knew what was coming and it's fine.
Especially in that stripper scene, we got super bad Jonah Hill again.
Yes,
which haven't gotten in a while. Like the giant eyes and then like the blue eyes. That, like I remember from Superbad when he would like freak out a lot. It was the moment where you hear the music playing and you don't know what David Duchovny is like, and they're going back in there and you don't know what David Duchovny is singing right away, but you could tell that like you know Jonah's like oh god he's at the piano he's playing, and then just like the reaction gets worse and worse, and then it's John Legend's Ordinary People. Which was David Duchovny was severely underused in this movie, but that was a shining spot for me.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
But to be fair, David Duchovny was like on morphine in order to make it through this movie because he looked like he was dead.
He, like, I don't know. They just rolled him out. I'm telling you, like, I feel terrible for him. He was exhausted.
I will say, so Jonah Hill, I didn't talk about him too much in my review, but I thought he was really good in this, and he's someone that annoys me a lot. really annoys me a lot. But Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Eddie Murphy going at it was the highlight for me. I absolutely was eating every minute of that up. And I want to speak to Miss Louis-Dreyfus here. I would die for you. Mm-hmm. Everything that she does is just gold to me. And I want to go back to when she first walked into the MCU. I screamed at an octave I have not screamed at since I was a toddler. I love her. I think she's so funny. Her comedic timing is so great. Someone reminded me that those two going at it was kind of like an old school SNL type thing as well, with their, you know, previous SNL stints.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I just love them for that. It's funny, Kurt, I approached this from a different angle because I had heard such bad things about the movie that I was not expecting to enjoy this at all. Mm-hmm. So I think the bar was set lower for me, which probably allowed me to enjoy it more, quite honestly, because usually I go in and I'm like, oh, yep, exactly what I thought. Yeah. But I was very, very happy about that. One thing I do think is really funny, and this is a deep dive into that Vegas scene. One of his friends in that is an actor who was big for a little bit. He was well known. Brian Greenberg. He was
recognized him.
Brian Greenberg was in One Tree Hill back in the day, was his big thing for a couple seasons. And then he's been in a few other things. Like, he was in Bride Wars. He was in Friends with Benefits. He was in a short lived show called How to Make It in America that was really good with Laura Prepon. He's also in one of my favorite movies of all time that I always forget about, which is, I don't know what that says, but it's called Prime. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but it's
with Thurman.
It's with Uma Thurman.
Yeah.
And he's like a young guy dating an older woman.
Yeah.
And Meryl Streep's his mom.
Yep.
And I love this movie. But it was just so weird because I think he had like one line in this and he's so, it's just a throwaway background character. I'm like, oh, Brian, what's going on, buddy? Time for new representation.
Yeah. He was in, it's a TV show with Alicia Cuthbert that he used to make a cameo in every once in a while. It'll come to me. But anyways, it was funny to see him and then be like, oh, he's going to be like this, like, you know, side character best friend. And then he just, it's like a fart in the wind. He just kind of disappears until the ending. So,
yeah. Yeah. Very, very interesting there. I'm looking back into some of the other shows that he was. Oh, he was in The Perfect Score back in the day. Oh, you remember that SAT movie?
Yeah. With Evans and ScarJo.
My God.
I forgot ScarJo was in that.
I did too. Oh, my God. He's been in a lot of things as like very, very supporting character. He was in the Tick TV series.
Wait, which Tick TV series?
The second one, the most recent one. Oh my God. Wow. Anyway, so ultimately grades, I gave this a 4 out of 5 because I actually really did enjoy it. I thought it was a well-updated, familiar story. Mm-hmm. But the humor, it was cringe at some points.
Oh, very. Yeah.
And I love that. I'm like, yes, keep hitting it. And someone commented on my post this morning and said like something about like woke bullshit or whatever. I was like, yes, got one.
I love the people that go right to that because it's like, just see it because this is not woke bullshit at all.
They're literally just having discussions.
This is something that like messes with you a lot. It rides right against that woke bullshit. But yeah. My God. Oh boy.
Drives me crazy.
And you are a podiatrist? And what was your father?
A podiatrist.
and your grandfather? A
podiatrist. Yeah. That was wonderful. All right, let's get into the latest news. Sean, what, Sean?
No, I will tell you off, Mike. I can't tell you here. Matt sent me a very inappropriate text.
Jesus. Friend of the pod, Matt. All right, we have to dive into Oscar nom reactions. And Sean, this is your baby to run with here. Start off by just giving us like the rundown of the surprises, any big news that came out of this, and then we'll dive into some of the controversy.
Happy nominations day, everybody. First, I'll start with the one that everyone really cares about. Best Cinematography was just an absolute mess. No, that's not what everyone cares about. But also, Best Cinematography was a mess. Like Top Gun Maverick not getting on there, which was like slated to win, is a little bit baffling. Mm-hmm. Also, like Avatar, which I guess people didn't really understand that there was a lot of cinematography in that was very challenging. Mm-hmm. They didn't get that. Okay, whatever. I'd say for the most part, there's like a little surprise throughout each situation, each category. But for the most part, it's pretty standard. The big surprise is obviously Brian Tyree Henry for Causeway, which, you know, as Joe and I have discussed, Causeway is a gigantic snooze fest.
I think you're mistaken. That was for Eternals.
Correct. Also to a
greatest
Don't say it, Kurt.
only takes a spark to light it.
So yes, Brian Terry Henry, Causeway. We don't want to misinform the public. I think that was a great one. I think this is one where, you know, it's weird to say that he's due considering he's so young and new, but I think he is sort of due. This might be a makeup nomination for If Beale Street Could Talk, which would have been like weird if he got in there since he was in one scene, but still like kind of stopped the show. But I think that was a really like great one to see. For Best Supporting Actress, all of it's pretty good. Thank God Stephanie Hsu got in there. Angela Bassett is probably the front runner, but the Marvel thing might weigh her down. Mm-hmm. Hong Chau getting that late surge to get in for The Whale was very deserved and very surprising to me still. I didn't think so. I really thought they'd represent Women Talking with Jesse Buckley.
So did I.
But that sort of lost a lot of steam and was kind of a miracle that got into Best Picture anyway. Other than that, I'm sort of looking, I'm going down them all and I'm just skipping some of them that don't really matter because they're pretty standard. I will say, you know, All Quiet on the Western Front, like huge late surge. This will now be the international feature winner over Decision to Leave, which didn't get nominated.
Which is crazy to me.
And RRR was the other popular one, but that wasn't even like submitted by India. Mm-hmm. Really bad call. Definitely would have made it in. So All Quiet on the Western Front just paves the way for it. With the, you know, the only competition being probably Argentina 1985, but I think All Quiet on the Western Front now has it in the bag. Usually the thing that gets the Best Picture nomination will get the Best International Film. It really deserves it. All Quiet on the Western Front is a spectacular movie. Like, I'm really glad it's going to get there. I'm trying to look at any other ones. Triangle of Sadness had a huge showing with the Best Picture nomination. There's always one, like, small, I guess, indie film that gets in there, and or art house film, if you will. I'm very surprised it was this one, but it turned out to be this one, and you know, I'm pretty happy for it. It's just like surprising that something like that got in there. I talked about cinematography already. Documentary feature was pretty standard, even though there was a lot on the short list that should have been on there. Goodnight Oppie, Wildcat, but you know, C'est la vie. Best Original Song. Okay, let's talk about this for a second because, you know, so we got this. I don't know why I need to spend this much time on it, but Diane Warren has been nominated like 18 times, never won. Yeah. And so then they gave her an honorary Oscar. So you think that would stop the madness of her getting nominated for movies that like legally don't exist. And just at this point, applause from Tell It Like a Woman. None of that is actually existing, but that apparently Diane Warren got nominated for a competitive Oscar again. I figured after she got her like, you know, honorary Oscar, they'd stop doing this crap where they nominate her randomly. Mm-hmm. They didn't. It's a shame. Not for not who's going to win anyway, which I'm really psyched about. I'm a little bit upset that Chow Papa from Pinocchio didn't get there, but you know, c'est la vie once again.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah, I really love that one so much. And like, you know, because the Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio was kind of a musical, so it would have been nice to see that there. Nothing really surprising for lead actor. I guess you could argue Paul Mescal is a surprise, but I saw that kind of coming. I really love that was on there because
me too.
That is, I saw that the day after the nominations, and mm-hmm. that is a very understated performance. It's like the Steven Yeun of this year.
I agree.
Because the focus is not on the performances. It's on like just the real life around it. So he had to work really hard to get there. I'm very happy he's there. And so this is like right now overdue people for television performances. Brian Tyree Henry for Atlanta and Paul Mescal for
Ordinary People.
Normal People. Yeah.
Normal People. Sorry. Normal People.
Thank you. But
John Legend stuck in your head.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly, I do.
I was just saying you do.
Best Picture, I almost pretty much had, with the exception of Babylon. I thought Babylon would just get in there on its technicals alone, like just, you know, but then it didn't really do so well in the technicals either. So that was kind of a surprise in general. Babylon got a little bit of a short drift. And then I just want to, yeah, so actor, I didn't talk about actress because we're going to talk about actress in a moment, but I will say that, you know, Dale Deadwyler should be in there for Till. I don't wish ill will on Andrea Riseborough or Ana de Armas, as much as I don't think, like, Daniel Deadwyler should be above both of those. It's a shame. I if I was someone that was like going to be upset about every single snub, I wouldn't have made it through this list without screaming. I'm just someone that's just going to kind of like get over it and eventually post what the Oscars got wrong Wednesday about it in a couple of months. I do think Michelle Williams should also kind of get kicked out.
So do I.
I won't cry category fraud too much. I think it's right on the line of supporting. She would have just gotten a supporting actress win if she just stuck there.
I agree.
And I commend her for like believing her character was a lead actress. It is sort of. I'm not going to like get too far off on that. But it was on the line enough where you could get away with it. And I feel like that's the way you just get an Oscar. And, you know, props to her for, you know, going with her gut on what her character means to the film. I just think that's a little bit wrong. But I mean, yeah, so I just talked a while, so you guys can jump in now if you want to.
Kurt, what were your thoughts on these? The one thing that stuck out to me was All Quiet to the Western Front, or on the Western Front, but the Academy loves a war movie, so that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite movies last year, so I was very happy to see you get 10 nominations. I was discussing this with somebody yesterday, actually, that Paul Mescal Best Actor nom. I said it on my show. I was like, I don't think he's going to get anything. I don't think the movie's going to get any nominations. To see that sneak in really, really made me happy. Like I was like almost very affected by it because I wasn't expecting it. That movie really struck a chord with me personally. The Claudio Miranda cinematography lack therefore of nomination for Top Gun was surprising.
Yeah.
There was another one as well, and I was discussing this. There was somebody else that was left out in cinematography that was very surprising to me. But hold I mean, on, Bardo gets this one nomination for cinematography, and I guess like it's kind of to be expected because that was the one thing that the movie really had going for was it looked beautiful. I mean, sure, whatever. Other than that, no, I mean, like kind of par for the course. The 11 nominations for Everything Everywhere All at Once. I made a very bold statement yesterday. I said, I think it's going to win Best Picture. Mm-hmm. I think Michelle Yeoh is going to steal Best Actress. Mm-hmm. And then I think somebody from, whether it be Stephanie Hsu or Jamie Lee Curtis is going to snag that supporting actress. And again, that's going to be another surprise. Those are my three lock predictions over on the Real Spotlight podcast yesterday. So, I don't know. I don't know what's to come. I feel like right now this movie has so much positive momentum mm-hmm. going forward, and everybody loves it, except for me. So it's just you know what I power to them. So I don't know if the Daniels will get it for director because I think Spielberg's got a lock on that, which is totally fine and understandable. But yeah, Joe,
it's I just think like I agree with you on the yo only because like. You know, in order to get a third Oscar, the performance has to be undeniable.
Yeah.
Blanchett's performance is undeniable.
Yeah.
But it's really tough to get that third.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get that third win. Like, people do sort of rail against you mm-hmm. for that third Oscar win. And, you know, McDormand recently did it, but that was on a weird actress year where it was just kind of like mm-hmm. everyone was like, it was like a four-way race at that point. But I think like Yeoh really does stand a chance. I like your supporting actress pick because there isn't really a front runner. Bassett is kind of it, but I have a feeling that Marvel stuff is going to hit her.
I
think if Bassett wins, it'll be because it's Bassett, which good. Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm a Bassett hound. Like I am a fan of Bassett. And so like, it's just like, and a lot of people in Hollywood are. So, it's going to be interesting. I think there will be a few surprises. I mean, there's a few definite locks. We didn't say his name when it comes to Everything Everyone Wants, but Kyu Kwan is sort of running away with this. Like, that's just happening.
I think everybody across the board knows that that's coming. Yeah. So
I think that Hong Chao is going to steal the supporting actress. That's my long shot take, hot take. I absolutely love that performance. So it's probably really a little bit of that bleeding into it as well. I don't know. I do think that we're going to have some surprises. I do think Best Supporting Actor is locked. I'm interested to see what happens with Best Actor. I think
I have no idea.
I think Butler or Farrell at this point. I think Frazier may have like fallen down a little bit.
Really?
Because a little bit,
Whale,
yeah.
I think because The Whale didn't get the nomination for Best Picture, I think that hurts it ultimately, or at least shows where the Academy is. But I don't know. I love The Whale too. So
I have a slight theory for Best Supporting Actress, where I think it's going to be Carrie Condon.
I'd love to see that.
She's a little bit constant throughout the whole thing. Yeah, and I feel like she could just rise up and all of a sudden kind of like, oh no, I can't remember her name from Minari, but like where there's no clear front runner and all of a sudden she just grabs like a SAG and everyone's like, oh, that makes sense. Oh yeah, let's just give it to her. And it's just like, that's just what happens. I for some reason, like someone said that and I was like, oh yeah, that's true. She's quietly been nominated for everything while everyone else has been a little bit of a, like, you know, around, like, you know, up and down with their nominations. I have no idea though. I really, this is going to be a, these are going to be some tough ones to predict. Like with the exception of supporting actor, no one's a lock. Like
it's crazy. Kurt, can we go back to your dislike for Everything Everywhere All at Once? Tell us more about that.
Oh God, you're going to put me, you know what? Just hang me out to dry, Joe.
Welcome to the Movies Podcast.
Yeah, he does this a lot. Don't worry.
I'm okay with it.
It's a movie podcast. Just share an opinion. We want to know more.
And then we'll lead into Eternals. I don't know, man. It's not that I think from like a technical aspect, it's just, it doesn't do it for me. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I've tried, guys. I tried it on Monday, for Christ's sakes. I tried it. I watched the whole movie again Monday afternoon in prep because I knew it was coming. And my wife's watching it with me. And she's like, this isn't for you, is it? And I was like, no, it's not, because she could just see the disdain on my face. I don't know. It's just, it just doesn't resonate with me. I'll leave it at that. So I don't think it's a bad movie. I don't think it's a horror movie. I don't like it. I'm not on the Everything Everywhere All at Once train. Never have been. Tried it back when it first came out in theaters, and I was like, oh, this,
I will say this. It's weird that it's this popular. It's weird that it probably will win Best Picture, because this is just a very strange movie. Like, I always say Best Picture should be like, it should go with the parents' rule. Like, you can recommend it with your parents.
Yes.
I hope to God my parents never see this movie.
Same.
They won't exactly dig the butt plug fight.
Yeah.
They already saw that in Belfast. They don't want to see it again.
Obviously.
But I loved it. It was my favorite film of the year. I'm very surprised it's going to be like a Best Picture like winner.
It was your favorite film last year?
It was my favorite film last year. Awesome. I kept on going back and forth about it. And I was like, do I want to be that internet basic? And I just said, I think I do. Like, it was just one of those where, like, I'm just going with the internet on this one, which is going to be the one thing that holds against it, is what the internet loves it. I think the older members might rail against it. This is like a very Roma Green Book situation where everyone was just like, you should be voting for Roma. And then they're like, screw you. You can't tell me what to do, young people. And then, then all of a sudden Green Book becomes Best Picture. So
we're the boomers, and we're going to fight back against these young kids.
It's one of those things where it's like, you know, that could be something that like goes against it. So, you know, I mean, it's obviously a three-way race. I think Fablemans is falling a little bit out of favor.
So do I.
But it's Banshees or Fablemans or Everything Everywhere All at Once. I think it's got to be one of those, I think.
Thank you. So I love hearing Banshees in that conversation.
Oh, God. I think the HBO Max streaming really did help it. Absolutely. Even though the Academy has access to all the movies all the time, they shouldn't be complaining about not being able to see movies. I'll take your Academy membership, and I'll see all the movies for free in fun little screens.
You have to get a movie subscription.
Movie. Shut up.
Movie. So that's a good lead-in, though, for Two Leslie.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, I'm gonna sideswipe us real quick.
Okay.
Gold Derby, which is obviously you know, the Bible here, Sean.
Gold Derby.
What's interesting is Everything Everywhere All at Once for Best Picture, they have it at 6-1 odds, and then behind it they have Elvis at 9-1 odds now.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah. No, like Elvis is just like really popular in all of the screenings. Like everyone is just adoring that movie when they come out of it. Yeah. Like I don't know what else is going to win besides Butler. Yeah. Like, I just don't know like what else. Maybe I guess some technicals design?
Maybe.
Costume?
Is it nominated for costume design? Is it nominated
it's
for costume
nominated
design?
For it's nominated for like six or seven, I think. Eight, like right? Yeah, like it's got a good heaping helping of nominations. Yeah. And also, I mean, like, let's face it, you know, the leading nominated movie is Everything Everywhere All at Once. And that's the one that usually gets kicked in the can. Mm-hmm. And something else gets Best Picture, because that's the one that gets overhyped. Mm. And then the hype drops. I don't know if that'll happen this year, but I don't know.
You know what that actually sounds exactly like? This harkens back. La La Land.
Yeah.
Goes in with just like this train of momentum and then takes a couple of acting awards and then it doesn't get the best picture. That's
tricky thing, though. Yeah. A24 did Moonlight to steal it from La La Land. Yeah. They run a hell of a campaign, and they are doing such a good job with everything everyone wants at the campaign. Yeah. There's so much goodwill behind that movie. They're running like a very solid CODA campaign where the cast is just going everywhere together, and they are just so lovable that it's just really tough to deny that one. But, you know, A24 is just good, man. I mean, they got Mezcal that nomination, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But, oh, man.
Well, they probably could have saved some money if they followed to Leslie's, you know, here playbook here with Andrea Riseborough. So, Sean, give us a primer on the drama around this.
So, to Leslie made $27,000 at the box office, which is just already like fascinating to me. And now it's probably made like $5 billion in rentals since Tuesday because everyone's like, let's just Google it and watch it.
This guy right here.
This guy right here.
Nope.
So, no,
I haven't watched it yet.
I will say this. I'm going to start with this. It's a really great performance. And Andrea Riseborough is a very talented actress. I recommend 000. She's amazing in a very little amount of Matilda, but like still great in that as well. I think she's very talented. I'm very happy she got this nomination. I am. It is a blatant look at politicking in Oscars. And it was truly obvious when like several actress tweets had the same exact template. And that just kind of grew to be something that... It looked a little bit gross. However, everyone does this. You politic to get your award. You go to events. Now, Andrea Riseborough didn't go to any events. She did a grassroots social media campaign. Mm-hmm. And basically, the director and her wife is his wife is an actress. The two of them, McCormick, the two of them, kind of just like told their actor friends about this movie. And then those actor friends told other people, and those actor friends told other people. Honestly, it's a fine, organic campaign. It really is. And I think that, if people are going to get upset about the Daniel Deadwyler slub, they should. It's a shame. It's a rough one. But, there was something really heartful about the Riseborough performance. It's a very actor-heavy performance. It's a very, intense performance. And it's good. I mean, that movie literally stole Tender Mercies. It's the exact same plot as Tender Mercies. And I was just like, wow, they're really stealing everything here. So that bothered me a little bit, but that's just the movie. I liked her performance a lot. Now, let's talk about the official thing that happened where, right now the Oscars are investigating. It's not – someone didn't follow the rules. One of the actresses, an actress in Titanic, I forget her name, she pretty much mentioned other nominees in her tweet or in her social media post. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's against the rules. I don't think Riseborough should get punished for that. I think that actress should get punished for that. I don't know, suspended for a year. I don't know, something like that. But I mean, you don't really have control over what an actor or actress posts. I guess it gets a little bit wishy-washy. Maybe you do. Maybe if you ran an ad and like it mentioned this other people, like, and it also didn't mention the other nominees maliciously. The post said, well, Michelle Yeoh, Cate Blanchett, and someone else are a lock. And so put Riseborough in one of those other two spots. So it wasn't even saying like, guys, Michelle Yeoh sucked. Like, make sure you put that. There was no trash talking going on here, which by the way, also happens, but under a whisper campaign. Like, negative campaigns do get run, but they're under rumors and they're not actually like posted, so that stuff also happens. So yeah, it rubs me the wrong way that they're investigating this, because this is a lovely grassroots campaign where actor friends got together and they voted for someone. Now there's a little bit of an icky thing about race here. I think that's something to be said. I think that Till is universal. I don't think they did a great job promoting her that much. And that was, that was really some of the tough things. I think the biggest issue we're going to have is that next year we're going to have a lot of these social media campaigns and they're not going to do as well. And it's going to be a little bit outside baseball for us, where all of a sudden we may get like four nominees that are like all like $27,000 films, which is tough. So I'm a little bit split by it. I think I'm mostly in favor of it. I'm saying, hey, you know what? They did politicking like everyone else does. You know why Rami Malek got a Best Actor win? It's because he showed up to every single press event and shook the right hands.
Exactly.
And he was not good in that movie, and it was kind of tough to see him win that.
Yeah.
But there is a little bit of politics in this. Then on the other side, you got like George C. Scott in 1970, who said, "Don't nominate me. The Oscars are stupid." Then when he got nominated, he has to revoke the nomination. Mm-hmm. The Academy said, "We won't do that. Your performance is that good." He won, but he didn't show up. There are people on the other end of this. Also, Monique did that, where she's like, "I'm not showing up to campaign events. I've got to work. I've got to like go to like stuff." She still won. So sometimes the performance is so undeniable, it transcends a campaign. Most of the time it doesn't. And so that's something that, you know, I think people are going to reevaluate campaigns. If the Academy is upset about what happened, by the way, I think they need to like retool their, their
guidelines.
Rules in. Yeah, the guidelines. I think that, like, you know, that's what you do. You don't like go and have an investigation and like, first of all, publicize that you're having an investigation, mm-hmm. making Riseborough to be the villain. I don't know. That part of it just rubs me the wrong way, but that's all I have to say about it.
I'm with you there. I'm totally skimming through that article again to remind myself of some of the details here, and you covered a lot of it, Sean. The Academy is meeting on Tuesday to discuss, and it doesn't seem like there is any official complaint that has been made as of yet. Which is important. It's also probably pretty unlikely that anything happens in this case in terms of like the actual nomination. A lot of us were surprised by this nomination, but I think if you've been following the Riseborough stuff, it's not completely out of the blue. What were your thoughts on all this?
No, I don't think it's completely out of the blue. I think it's a very pleasant surprise, more of a surprise than After Sun's Best Actor.
Yeah.
It's tough. Because you've got this momentum for Andrew Riseborough now, and Riseborough, pardon me, and like it's a great performance. It's one of the best performances I've seen this year. Again, as Sean, as you mentioned, it's just a carbon copy of Tender Mercies. Doesn't mean it's not a good movie.
Yep.
And I really enjoy it. Hey, and like, listen, anytime, and this is maybe why After Sun really resonated with me too. Anything to do with you know, mental health or addiction or so on and so forth, mm-hmm. usually kind of comes at the forefront of any acting nominations and such, but this thing just kind of puttered out. No, I said this figurative situation. I said, if this To Leslie had been an A24 movie, balls to the wall, they would have been campaigning for her for an Oscar, right? So it's just an unfortunate circumstance where this production company didn't have the money to start churning out materials and goods as every other studio does to get Riseborough, you know, a nomination in the usual typical way, right? I think as everybody keeps using this grassroots campaign, like it's just actors recognizing their fellow peer did a phenomenal job in something that nobody got to see, including us, right? Like, I mean, for God's sakes, we've got our fingers on the pulse of every new movie coming out, and I hadn't heard of this until all of a sudden the social media stuff came out, and I was like, a movie with Allison Janney and Andrew Riseborough went under my radar. Like, what the hell is going on? I mean, if they investigate this and then they turn, it turns out to, you know, kind of smear her chances. I mean, I don't think she has it. She's maybe third or fourth in the dog race right now, but, and I say maybe even like third is pushing it. It just kind of like, once again, shows the Oscars are so still so outdated, and the Academy is just kind of like one step behind what the rest of us are doing.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the sense of like, you should be able to use social media as a campaigning platform, right? Like, for God's sakes, if they're doing it in politics, why is it not okay to be doing it for your friends in the acting world, right? So it's the world we live in now. It's the TikTok, the Instagram, and the Twitter, man. Come on. So, yeah, I mean, I might come off as arrogant and a little bit kind of over-opinionated on it, but I like to see something like this just kind of come out of nowhere. And the Paul Mescal one was like the one where I was like, oh yeah, awesome. And then to see her name mentioned, it was very bittersweet. And you know, as I said, whether it be Gwyneth Paltrow or Demi Moore or Frances Fisher or whoever else was kind of campaigning for her, it worked. And I'm very happy for all parties. So
it's also very important that the Academy really shouldn't piss off the actors branch.
Yeah.
That it's like there's 8,000 members. I think like 7,000 of them are actors. So please, God, don't piss off the actors branch.
Yeah, yeah.
People are comparing this movement to like what a super PAC does with elections, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
The whole I've said this to you before, Sean, on here. The whole campaigning process for Oscar noms is it just frustrates the hell out of me.
Oh, yeah, it's bad.
it's always been bad. It seems like it gets worse every year in some way. I wonder how long it will be until we do see some significant changes to the process, if we ever do.
So let me just ask you though, how does that process change? What do you think is the next plausible step in the campaigning process? Because I was reading something yesterday where it's like it only takes 220 yep. votes to get somebody yep. in for an acting nomination. In my mind, I'm like, if you've got 7,000 members in an acting branch who are nominating their peers, that's a very, very slim margin. Like, for
220 first place votes.
Oh, my apologies.
That is like, okay. Yeah. I remember okay. I heard the 200 votes and I was like, holy crap. But then yeah. I found out it's like 200 first place votes, which is still actually kind of simple. I mean, they definitely got that with Andrea. I think they got yeah. like even more than that because
yeah.
all the actors got behind it. And yeah, it's. It would be interesting. I don't know how it could change, honestly. I mean, you know, you could just say, hey, less politics and stuff like that. But I think no matter what, like, you know, there's just going to be loopholes to that are just going to be too tricky. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I have to look at that further. Yeah.
I guess I get frustrated with the unwritten rule about the amount of press you have to do and all that stuff and how that is how that impacts the industry, who is largely voting, who is the membership, who is voting for these nominations. It's just, to me, there's so much that's unwritten that immediately sparks distrust of the process, which is frustrating. And this goes back to what we've talked about around the Oscars for years, Sean, it's the Oscars. I'm going to be really crass here. It's the industry jerking the industry off. And that, that's pretty put that explicit on this podcast it just bothers me so much that's and then they and you know that goes back to we joked about it at the beginning here, but your Super Bowl thing in the opening credits of the show where like you know their ratings are down because people are supposed to tune in to watch everyone like cheer for themselves essentially and the industry cheer for itself, and it frustrates me a lot. I think the fact that the Academy is as old as it is and has been doing this for so long is one thing, but the fact that it hasn't changed at all is something that I think is completely out of tune with the general public, especially the cinephile public, if you will, or the, you know, the critics and all of that, which is why you've seen Critics Choice pop up and Hollywood Critics Association, all of that, to try to balance that out in some way. And of course the Golden Globes are a whole nother ball game as well. But I don't know how it could change. Back to your question, Kurt. I feel like something has to change in the future because this is just weird to me. This Riseborough thing is just very, I'm glad it happened. It's cool to see that it happened. It bothers me that a lot of other actors may have been left out of these conversations because of the fact that either enough money wasn't pumped into the campaigns from the studios to the industry who votes, which just seems dirty to me, or they didn't do enough press and that type of stuff. Like Danielle Deadweiler, going back to her. The Woman King, we haven't mentioned, is also another one that got
completely snubbed. We completely forgot about that,
Completely snubbed, and it was a popular movie from critics and fans. And Viola Davis, you know, I never really thought that she would be a major contender, but she's worthy enough for it, in my opinion. That it was a great performance. So I don't know, something has to change. I continue to feel dirty when we discuss the Oscars.
Gross. I agree. I did that earlier this week as well. So to go back to what you're saying there, and we'll perhaps maybe I'll. Lighten the tone up a little bit. I was talking to a friend of mine at work. So I work at a gym. I'm a trainer, and I was talking to one of my clients, and I go, hey, did you see the Oscar nominations yesterday? And he goes, Kurt, why would I pay attention to a big industry circle jerk? And I go, this is a guy who's like not even obviously like in the know like we are. So for you to word it that way, that the industry is doing that, and then for somebody who again actively does not pay attention to probably the second, maybe third biggest thing on TV every year, it just goes to show that, again, like, the general public's very, like, no, we're okay. You guys go do your thing over here because, like, we're just kind of sick and tired of, like, hearing things like this, right? So, anyways. Sorry,
completely, they're out of touch.
Very out of touch. And just unrelated anecdote there. So,
I think that makes sense. This is Sean's Super Bowl, though. So when the Patriots aren't in there, and
which they won't be for. I had my time. That's gonna be it. Yeah. I look at this and yeah, like I always see people that are just like, oh, the Oscars are on. I don't even know all the films that are nominated. And there's a part of me that looks at the meme of the Simpsons principle where it's like, no, it's the children that are wrong. Am I out of touch? No, and I do kind of rail against these people. I'm like, watch the movies. You'll like the movies. I mean, look at the Best Picture lineup this year. I mean, sure, I won't be recommending Triangle of Sadness to a lot of my friends that aren't big into movies, but Top Gun Maverick is there. Avatar The Way of Water is there. A few, like The Fabelmans is an accessible one, although it didn't really do so hot at the box office. But I mean, there's plenty of like ones that reach out to the like a box office, a real people sort of situation. I think it goes both ways. I always like a mix of the two. I always like a couple of crazy cinephile ones and then a couple of the other ones.
But I don't think that the Best Picture nominees are that accessible across the board. I mean, you talk about something like Women Talking, Sean.
Tar is not accessible.
Man, Tar is a tough movie to get through. I started it the other night after Two Leslie, and I was like, this is too heavy. Two back to back. I can't do it right now.
Yeah. They're not accessible movies. So then, like, you get back to, you know, whether it's they want ratings for the awards or they want to represent what the general public wants. The general public wants to see the movies that they love and that they enjoy represented or recognized. And that's not what happens during these Academy Awards, because the big blockbusters, the ones that do really well, aside from this year with Avatar, of course, and Top Gun Maverick, they don't get recognized. That's not what the Oscars are there for. And it's again, out of touch. And there needs to be some sort of congruency there that maybe makes it better in the future.
I just want to say this sentence because it's my favorite sentence to say in the world. Tar is now streaming on Peacock. So if we ever want to really reach the masses, that's how you do it.
Yeah. Is it really?
Yeah, as of like, I think Wednesday or Thursday? Yeah.
Dear God.
Yeah.
I would love to see how much they shelled out for that one.
Yep.
Oh, God. I hated that movie.
Did you?
I didn't hate it. I just didn't like it.
Okay.
When you came back with the 3 out of 5, I was so pleasantly surprised. Yeah. I was like, I thought you were going to rail that one.
Well, it was very much like what you said earlier about You People. It was like, good, great performance. Didn't love the movie. Didn't hate the movie. It was kind of just like, okay, cool, great. But you know what movie I did really enjoy this year? That was Violent Night with David Harbour.
Yes.
That was a lot of fun, and we are completely switching gears from the serious conversation of the Oscars to talk about the fact that Violent Night 2 is in the works, and it seems like the writers and director are returning. Speaking with The Wrap, he said, there's stuff we left on the floor, like the North Pole, Mrs. Claus, the elves. But story-wise, I think we have a really, really cool idea that expands on the world and scope, but still keeping that tone that we love from the first one. I love that he said that we love from the first one when it was like his baby. But Kurt, first off, your thoughts on Violent Night, the movie itself, and then does it deserve a sequel?
I didn't see it. It's like the one December release I missed. Yeah, guys, I didn't see it. And then once like the whole Christmas train kind of between like the 17th and the 24th started rolling, I just didn't have any time to sit down and actually enjoy it.
Well, with 34 children, it's really challenging.
I mean, hey, man, I'm a man of the people, and I have to spread all my presence out. I guess that can be interpreted in several different ways. But anyways, it's funny that you say, though. I was reading the article, and I think it was in the one in The Wrap where they're talking about Mrs. Claus. Who do you cast as Mrs. Claus? I had a brainstorm about this yesterday.
Did you see the rumor going around the internet?
No, please tell me.
People are pushing for, oh my gosh, Winona Ryder.
I was going to say, yes, absolutely.
That would be great, though.
That is a Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn, and that other weird Santa movie. That's perfect.
Yeah. Who do you think, Kurt?
Ooh.
I thought you had someone.
No. I was thinking, I was like, who would be like a good Mrs. Claus? And everybody kind of be like,
You know who I would say? Huh? Because of her performance in, was it the movie This Is 40 with Paul Rudd and Melissa McCarthy.
Those
bloopers of Melissa McCarthy just being foul as shit.
Yeah.
That's Melissa McCarthy that I love. And seeing her in this rated R Violent Night 2 as a foul-mouthed Mrs. Claus would be the funniest shit in the world.
For me, it would be Margot Martindale. But that's just because I put her in everything. But it just to come home to Margot Martindale as Mrs. Claus, who just would be just menacing.
It's gonna be Jared Leto as a trans Mrs. Claus.
Oh, yes, probably. Absolutely. Yep. I liked Violent Night. I think this is a bad idea to do a sequel to this. It's like, you know, you have a fun little contained classic movie. It's gonna be a little bit tricky to go further with it. You know, good that they're bringing back the same director, though. I think that's, you know, a lot of fun. Yeah, this is, you know, yeah, sure, expand the world, have some fun with it. I don't think it's going to hit like this one did, but I'm still on board.
I'm looking forward to the multiverse version where they get David Harbour's Santa Claus and Tim Allen's Santa Claus, and then they have to go fight somebody. And yeah,
oh, I'm into that.
So yeah, it'll happen. That. Quote me now first. You heard it here. You heard it here first on the Guide the Movie.
We should be writing this down.
I know.
Well, to all of the movie producers that listen, please make sure that you give us credit, specifically Kurt.
Thank you.
So as one sequel is greenlit and on the way, another one seems like it is not in the cards. This is coming from Eddie Redmayne, who is the star of the Harry Potter spinoff series Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Mm-hmm. He was speaking to NME, I believe it was, and after the third film, The Secrets of Dumbledore, that came out last year, underperformed greatly. The series has had a lot of controversy around it, but after it's underperformed, it doesn't seem like there is a fourth film in the works right now. It hasn't been greenlit. And if you remember correctly, this was the series that was planned as five films, with the fifth one being the ultimate battle between Grindelwald and Dumbledore. But the controversies, I think, have really kind of buried this a little bit, this whole series. So first off was Johnny Depp and his legal battles with Amber Heard. He was recast after the first film, which fans kind of like went nuts about. Was it the first film or the second film? Second film. After the second film. And then Mads Mikkelsen took over that role, which in my opinion, he did really well in the third one. Mm-hmm. And then you have Ezra Miller and their just insane, you know, off-screen personal issues that continue to plague Warner Brothers in everything they try to put them in. And then you also have the controversy around J.K. Rowling's personal views and her comments around trans individuals online that she never backs down from and is very vocal about. So it seems like all of those controversies have really hurt the series. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, The Secrets of Dumbledore was a solid movie. I really enjoyed it as a Harry Potter fan and as someone that loves diving deeper into the stories. I think they did a good job rebounding from The Crimes of Grindelwald. But Sean, I wonder what your thoughts are with this. I know you're not the biggest fan of this series or Harry Potter in general, but I guess my question would be, they had five movies planned. They're well into the story. Do they cut it now? Do they just, you know, how do they handle this?
I think it's a back burner situation. Get the audience a little bit more hungry for it. If you want to like have like five films that ultimately have Grindelwald and
Grindelwald crossover,
the crossover that the people are clamoring for.
Grindelwald and Dumbledore fighting. I mean, you know, just get one more movie where they fight, like kind of like, because I feel like these, my issue with these movies, they are somewhat entertaining, they really are, but they've kind of meandered. I mean, the first one involved Eddie Redmayne's character in the lead role, and now he's like, you know, they're kind of like forcing him in as much as they can, and it's like, actually, just ditch him. Get into like just like the absolute Dumbledore situation. Put Jude Law in there because he's been a damn fine Dumbledore. And you know, I mean, wait a little while. Just ditch Ezra Miller's character. Who really cares about him anyway? He's just like, I did not care about him that much anyway. I think that
I think after the second, not to cut you off, but I think after this third one, they have a natural way to do that.
Yeah,
agreed.
Yeah, I was enjoying these like a little bit. I just think that, you know, it's been a weird trek for these three movies where it's been kind of tough and it sort of ended on a kind of tough angle. So at this point, I sort of say to it, you know, leave it on the back burner for a little while, let it cool off, and then people will be hungry for some Harry Potter kind of. People love Harry Potter, they just do, and they haven't really loved these movies too much. I do remember Secrets of Dumbledore, while it did terrible at the box office, got decent reactions from fans. I think, I don't know about critics, but fans sort of were digging what they were doing there.
Well, you could only go up after the second one.
That's also true. Like, it was pretty rough second one. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I remember, though, I gave like a crap review for the second one and people started like defending it. And I was like, oh, okay.
Toxic fandom? What?
Who knows?
I myself live with a pothead.
my darling wife. I really enjoyed the first one. Fantastic Beasts kind of like caught me off guard as to how entertained I was. Second one, again, same thing. Like I dug it. Haven't seen the third one. But to go back, Joe, what you're saying there with diminishing returns here, and I'm just going to pull up. So worldwide, the first one goes $814 million. Second one, bigger budget, $654 million. Third one, also bigger budget, just by a smidge, $200 million. $406 million. So you've got $800, $600, and then $400 million. I mean, the track record's getting more expensive, and you've got something that's getting you diminishing returns. Like, yeah, it doesn't make sense that they want to just kind of table it and say, screw it. Like, we're just going to wait until we can do a Harry Potter and the Cursed Child movie with the whole OG cast. Spend the money there. Because you know that'll make gangbusters money. That's a guaranteed billion-dollar hit, right? But, yeah, I don't know much as to, you know, why they wouldn't or why they won't, I should say, or why they will make another one. I don't really care. I didn't say the third one. And I think the reason why I stayed away from the third one is, as you said, like, there's just so much like off screen controversy that it just kind of tarnished my like actually wanting to enjoy the film. So I dig Mads, though. Mads is I always watch something that says, so I feel bad saying that.
But. Yeah, Mads is great. I do think there's, if they wanted to bring back Depp now, but again, I mean, not to get into the Depp stuff, but the reason that he was removed originally was not because of the ongoing U.S. court battle, but it was the judgment in the U.K. that pretty much like said he did what he did. So that's why they ultimately removed him. I do think that they could probably bring him back in some way if they wanted to, just based, number one, it's a Wizarding World, so you can figure it out.
Oh yeah,
you change back.
You change back. But my opinion on this, and this is a larger Harry Potter conversation that's happening right now, because there's a huge video game coming out in a week and a half right now. Hogwarts Legacy, that is supposed to be a huge open world, very like highly anticipated game that people are talking about boycotting because of the money that goes to J.K. Rowling. And she's just become such a tarnished figure in this whole conversation. Here's my take. I think the pandemic hit the series as well.
I agree.
Because the first one came out in what, 2016, was it?
2016, yeah.
Yeah, and then 2018, and then 2022. The third film got delayed a long ass time. I think that's part of it, but that's not defending the wildly varied storytelling of the three films. I think they could wrap this up in a 10-episode series on HBO Max, make it an event series, just bring everyone in, spend the money to knock it all out, make them each like powerful one-hour episodes or whatever it may be, maybe, I don't know, shorter if you want. But I think they would be able to wrap that up in a positive way that would allow them to escape the 5-movie commitment, but also wrap up the story. It doesn't sit well with me when you're this deep into a planned story and you just let it fizzle and go away. The last movie kind of left it open for what's to come, of course, as they all do. So I do think that they need to figure out a way to wrap it up. And I think there are things they can do to win back the fans. I do think you're right, though, Kurt. Until they do that Cursed Child, which I think David Zaslav wants to do with Warner Brothers. He's been very vocal about that.
Very vocal.
A lot of people say Fantastic Beasts is not Harry Potter.
I agree.
And yeah, I'm kind of with them there. Yeah. There's a charm to them, and I do enjoy it, but I do think that they need to get back to what worked. Yeah. Oh, man.
That video game that's coming out, though, I think if you let that, it's like a boiling pot. You let that simmer and just build this kind of positive brand awareness again and get it away from Fantastic Beasts and actually about like Harry Potter and Hogwarts and such. Let that be the catalyst to actually, you know, making people want to have more of this wizarding world, right?
Like, I mean,
whether it be Fantastic Beasts or, again, like you said, like another Harry Potter movie. Just to bring one thing up here, you said that it's this open world Harry Potter game. The first place that my brain went to was Grand Theft Auto, and all I was thinking about.
Well, apparently you can like Avada Kedavra people right away.
100%.
I'm going to be the baddest Slytherin when I buy that game. I can't wait.
You can beat up Slytherin hookers and then, you know, steal their brooms.
My God. Slytherin hookers are the worst, man. Those are the ones that, like, take your money and run.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, my God.
That's the new open world concept game from Warner Brothers.
I'm excited for that game, but we can talk more about that in the future. All right, I want to switch gears here, and as sort of our wrap up story, I mentioned earlier that the 007 conversation is really heating up. So you know, while producers try to figure out what's happening with the Harry Potter world and Harry Potter series, Barbara Broccoli et al. Are trying to figure out the future of 007, and we have a lot of casting rumors here. I found an article that I included in the outline that sort of covers pretty much everyone I think has been mentioned. So let me run through them real quick, and then my hope would be, Kurt, I'm going to start with you after this, is who your pick or picks would be to move forward with this franchise. Yeah. So first and foremost, Aaron Taylor-Johnson has been the one that's been in the mix most recently. He was it was leaked into the news that he's the most recent one that met with them, I believe. Mm-hmm. He's also in the news a lot right now because he is cheating on his wife, I believe.
Oh, there we go.
Aaron.
I believe that was
Aaron.
If there's not a perfect James Bond, who else is there? Like, come on. Like,
No, buddy.
Where is it? Yeah. He's rumored to be cheating with Joey King, which is interesting to me.
Wait, what? His co-star from Bullet Train?
Uh-huh.
Yo, buddy. Boy. Yeah, you don't dip your toe in the work pool, my friend.
That's a whole nother conversation, though.
Pleasure don't dip your separate. Bullet train in the...
Oh, my God. That's a whole nother conversation, though, because... Oh, sorry, hold on. My dog is like... because he is... If you remember, he married a woman that was like very much older than him when he was only, I believe, 18 or something.
Oh,
do you remember this? So there was a lot of talk that like she was grooming him essentially. And I know that's such a loaded term these days, but like that. And so now people on the internet are like cheering him on for cheating on her. And it's just a gross discourse in and of itself.
Oh God.
But anyway, back to this. Aaron Taylor Johnson, Tom Hardy's been in the mix for a while. Killian Murphy, which I don't see at all. Reggae John Page, James Norton, who I don't know much about. War and Peace, Happy Valley, and Mick Mafia. Sam, I'm gonna butcher this name. Hewin from Outlander.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Vin Diesel's Bloodshot, which I completely forgot existed until I just saw
it. I thought you were gonna say and Vin Diesel for Bond. I was like,
when you're Bond, your family. Aiden Turner, who I don't know much about either. Tom Hiddleston, Richard Madden, who would be my pick. Jamie Bell, which is interesting. Jack Loden, from Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Michael Fassbender, who seems like he's too old right now for this.
I love Fassbender, man. I just want him to
stop racing and be in movies.
That's my guy. I know.
Idris Elba. Henry Cavill.
He'll always be there, man, in that discussion. Absolutely. So.
They're like a handsome British guy. Oh, there he is.
Oh.
Kurt, who, whether it's from this list or other picks that you may have, who do you think would be good to play him moving forward? And then I guess my follow-up question, and maybe that's the first question, is where do you think they should take this? Is it just like doing more stories of this older James Bond? Do they go back to sort of like the early days of Bond? What do you hope for?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. I think I really, really dug the whole Craig series. Obviously, there's some ones that putter out there, like Quantum of Solace. Not a great movie, but it's still very entertaining, right? And we kind of keep going back to that. Like, it's fine with what we've watched. I think you still keep it in present day. I don't think you do this like kind of like I've heard through the grapevine that like, oh, you had like a throwback to Bond being in the 70s or in the 80s, like almost like a period piece. I'd like to see. I feel like Tom Hardy's too big of a name now. And here's the reason why I say that. Hardy would have been my choice. But you got Aaron Taylor-Johnson, who's 32. Daniel Craig, if I remember correctly, when he was cast, he was around the exact same age. So at least you've got a guy who can be your face for James Bond for a minimum 3 to 4 to maybe 5 movies, right? I think Aaron Taylor-Johnson, good-looking dude, great actor. I think he's a great actor. Not to bring on all the off-screen BS that you're talking about there. I just looked it up. That Nowhere Boy, his director, was the one that he married. Sam Taylor. Oh, I screwed this up. Give me 1 second here. Nowhere Boy. Sam Taylor Wood is her name. And she is much, much older than him. Yeah. And it's basically a movie about John Lennon. We keep going back to John Lennon in this conversation, guys. That ordinary people.
Ordinary people. So
I know, man. But
that's the truth.
But yeah, I think that like if Aaron Taylor-Johnson's I think he's being groomed for something big, like bigger. And like, I mean, he had his shot in the MCU. That's obviously kind of gone out. You put him as your new James Bond and you have him there for 10 to 12 years. I think it's a great transition away from Craig, because it's a very different look. And you don't have him as this like grizzled army vet. Yeah. I think you give us that like super suave, sexy, like walks into a room and everybody's head turns type of Bond. Very much like, you know, the Connery or the Pierce Brosnan style Bond that some of us may have grown up on, right? So, or watching, I should say. But yeah, Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm sort of on the same wavelength with it. I really like the idea of Aaron Taylor Johnson. That one was just thrown in my head and I can't get it out of my head.
Yeah,
I like, you know, let's deviate from the gritty real Bond, like the Ian Fleming Bond, who's like, oh, he's actually not a good guy. And he's like really like grizzled and everything. Yeah. I loved that. And I think now you go back to, you know, I think the classic retro Bond, still in modern times, but like, yes, you know, with the goofy kind of gadgets, you know, we have Ben Whishaw as Q. Please keep him in there. Please keep him in there. We have the male M again. Please keep Ralph Fiennes in there. I want them all to still be there. I don't know if they will or not, but I really like them in those roles. In terms of the other people there, I always think you cannot put a celebrity in Bond. You got to put someone either unknown or not that known. I think Aaron Taylor Johnson's kind of that line where, you know, that's not a household name completely. I think Daniel Craig was in like only a few movies of note before he became Bond. Yeah. And I think that was a big thing. It's like, I want people to say who when they're casting it.
Can I pull it up for one second? That's so funny that you say that, because Craig, I was going through his filmography as we were talking there. Craig's in like three or four movies, but he's very under the radar.
Yeah.
Big movies, I'll say here. Lara Croft Tomb Raider, the first one.
Oh, yeah.
Next year, Road to Perdition. 2004, yeah. Layer Cake, which was a really big hit in the UK. And then Steven Spielberg's Munich, and he plays a minor role in that. And then that's when, and he's already cast as James Bond by this point, 2004, yeah. 2003, 2004. And then 2006 hits, and Casino Royale comes out. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, it's a good fit. You know, we recognize him, but like we don't know exactly who he is, and let him kind of like flourish in that stardom, right? So I apologize for interrupting.
Oh, no, please. Yeah, I mean, I remember him in Munich. I remember like, yeah, it was like around the same time where like Munich hit. I was like, this guy's really cool. And then I sort of knew that he was in, I made like the link very quickly because he's very different in Munich, but I really like him in that. I'll just say this part, and I don't think it's going to happen in this iteration, but eventually I would like to see, and it's, I hate to bring the conversation to this, but I would like to see a black Bond. I would like to see, you know, Dev, or he's not black, but a dark skinned Bond. I'd like to see Dev Patel in there. Idris Elba is way too old. I would like to see, like, you know, I guess Renee Jean Page. I kind of want to see a different, like a very different iteration to the character. It wouldn't just be for the sake of it being a black Bond or for like a political reason. I kind of would like a little bit of a different perspective on that role. Mm-hmm. So like eventually way down the road, that would be a very, very cool thing. But I would say stay away from celebrities. Tom Hardy would make a cool grizzled Bond. I would never go against that. Absolutely. I don't want a name. I would rather have Aaron Taylor Johnson. Just seems to fit that line perfectly.
Yep.
Well, and we're doing a little bit of a disservice to Aaron Taylor Johnson saying he's not in anything big.
Yeah,
Kraven the Hunter is coming out this year.
Big time.
pick is and has always been Richard Madden for this. I love Richard Madden as an actor, and no, not just because of the Eternals, Kurt. I like him in a lot of other things. The series I keep going back to is the 6-episode series from the BBC that's on Netflix now, available on Netflix, is The Bodyguard.
Oh, yeah.
He's great show. Absolutely incredible in that.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. But then you see his range in things like Rocket Man and other films that he's been in. Uh-huh. The rumors over the years have been that he is that he's a gay man. He's just not out publicly. And that part of the reason he hasn't come out publicly is because he's been in the mix for Bond, and they didn't think his representation doesn't think that that would sit well with the fandom and stuff like that. So
really,
that's interesting to me. And if that is the case, that worries me about them even going the direction of a black man, honestly, yeah. Because I feel like that shows that they're very
out of touch,
out of touch and beholden to the, I don't want to keep saying toxic part of the fandom, but the fandom that doesn't want that, the part of the fandom that doesn't want change.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think there's still a lot of great names out there. I wonder, Sean, I think you said this like months ago when the Aaron Taylor Johnson news leaked, that if it's leaking, that probably means he didn't get it. I think that was you that said that, but there may be other people in the mix that we don't even know, like a Daniel Craig type that, you know, we're not even thinking about at this point. I don't know. I'm fascinated to see where they go with this. I do hope that they do more of a back in a day story with 007. Let's see how he came to be a little bit more of the formative years, and not just kind of do a rehash that we have done with so many others. Bring Pierce Brosnan back. No, I'm kidding. even though I love those movies at the time. I had such a blast. Die another day.
Come on. Great stuff.
We played the Madonna. Wish I could die another day. Classic. Maybe I'll make a playlist on Spotify of all the songs from Bond.
Oh yeah. Oh, there's already one there. Trust me.
Okay, there's got to be. Yeah, I'm sure.
Somebody beat you to the punch. So.
Oh man. Well, we should.
They should just. let's start really young. Let's have a Bond for 30 years. Cast the kid from Belfast. Just have him in the role for 30 years. We're going to see him. It's going to be like Boyhood. We just see him grow up. He's in the military now. They're putting him in missions when he's like 16 years old. He's killing people by the time he's 17. And then we see him turn into a degenerate alcoholic by the time he's like 25.
horrifying to see the actor devolve in that fashion.
Well, and, you know, the crazy thing is that most child actors follow that path anyway. So
yeah,
right?
We'll just imitating be monitoring life. It. We'll be keeping him safe.
Yeah.
Who's on Disney? Who can we get from Disney?
Who's the kid from High School Musical?
Gabriel Labrell. Let's put him in.
There you go.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, I love him. He's
a Canadian kid. I love that. Slap an accent on him. So.
All right. We like to wrap up every week with rants and raves. And my rant right now, Kurt, is that you have a problem with me and my like for Eternal.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of all kinds, I do not at all. I've come to appreciate Eternals. I really disliked it the first time I saw it. A second go around, I did have a little bit more. I think, you know what I think it was? The day that I saw it, when it was released back in November 2021, my wife and I went to go see it in 3D at a theater here in Toronto. And the 3D was really bad. And I usually go see stuff only – I only allow 3D movies to happen if they're IMAX. And for some reason, this wasn't playing in IMAX, and we saw it on the normal screen. But it was distorted. So I really had a bad experience with it. I've come to really appreciate it. I think it's great. I love Richard Madden. I echo everything he said, Joe. I love to see that guy in more stuff. I just laughed when you posted on Instagram the other day about Eternals, and I was like, oh god, here we go. But I think it's mid MCU. It's not one of my lower. I had it like one of my lowest, like 30-31 a couple of months ago, and I did a ranking of the whole MCU, and now it's kind of like mid. It's like around like between like 18-19-20. So I have a big appreciation for it.
And I have it currently sitting at.
Oh, geez. Yeah, we'll wait for this.
Listen, shut up, Sean.
three?
I have it at five.
Five? Hey, man.
Thor Ragnarok, Avengers Endgame, Spider-Man No Way Home, Black Panther, and Eternals. I don't think I did put Wakanda Forever at six. I'm updated. Look at that. What you're referring to that I posted was actually really surprising news to me, that Eternals was the number one streamed MCU film on Disney Plus last year. Which we, Sean, I don't know if we said this back in the day or if it's just been a recent conversation, but it seems like I always felt like people would come around to Eternals to see it as much better. My dog just bit me. Much better.
not a fan of Eternals.
A much better movie than it was given credit for at the time. Yeah. God, he's driving me crazy.
There are some beautiful visuals in it.
I will say, I did not understand the hate. I did not adore that movie. But I will say, like, it wasn't as bad as the reaction that it got. Right. I was a little bit like kind of amazed by the reaction. I mean, it's very ambitious, and having Chloe Zhao, who had great visuals in it, someone who only has like one actor in their movie and everyone else is a real person, is now like doing this insane global scale Eternals movie, was like, that is just like beyond bonkers to have her director. But I thought like her visuals, which did get criticized, I thought they were pretty good. I thought they were kind of cool.
What
like
was it that was story? Very different. What was that story that like there were like waves crashing or something? And Feige was like, "Oh, how did you get that?" She's like, "I filmed waves."
Crashing. I mean, and then you got like Barry Keoghan in there, who is like, I mean, he's running a cult, which is amazing. Like, I think like my issue with this movie was that I kind of wanted a movie about each one of these people.
Absolutely.
Like, I just wanted to stick with Barry Keoghan for most of it, except for Sprite. Good God. Like, what? Please, no.
Got a little uncomfortable. Yeah.
Did she was supposed to? But the I think what we're seeing now is that people are coming around to the Eternals, which is really interesting. And I wonder how much of it we're going to see in the future, or how much of the story we're going to see. I've said for a while that Brian Tyree Henry's character, I think, is responsible for the creation of the Ten Rings, and I think we're going to see more of that coming forward. We see the after credit scene. Yeah. In Shang-Chi, where they're like looking at the Ten Rings and stuff, very reminiscent to what we see in Eternals. And then also, at the time, we didn't know this, but it looks a lot like some of the visuals we're seeing out of Quantumania. So I think we're about to see. I mean, Feige said this months ago that the roadmap is there. And so I can't wait until we kind of have those aha moments moving forward with Phase 5 and see that there's going to be that a lot of the stuff that we criticized at the time probably is going to make more sense.
It is a gigantic ambition of a movie. Like the fact that they like even like were able to just make it in general. I love the statement that like I've heard recently that's like all movies are a miracle, which is like a fun thing to say. But that one really is miraculous that like they wanted to even like somewhat legibly pull it off. I think that and that might have been people's issue. It makes sense that it's the most streamed on Disney Plus because I think like with the critic reaction, people just didn't bother to go to the theaters for it. And then they waited for it to come out there. And I think that's what worked about it.
I agree with you there. All right, let's switch to you, Sean. You have a rave about poker face.
Which is always fun because I'm trying to search for the images of Poker Face for like the review eventually and everything. And all that comes up is the Lady Gaga song instead of the...
And just put that as the thumbnail.
And also, just to cut you off real quick, I just brought up to see Rotten Tomatoes what Eternals was at. And it's still 47% for critics, but it's 77% for audience.
That's cool. It's good to see.
I'll give it that. For Poker Face, it's the Rian Johnson series. It's on Peacock, so no one's going to see it. I'm waiting for that moment where like Peacock does have that show that brings subscribers. For me, it was Girls 5 Eva. I said, okay, I need to watch that show. So I subscribed to Peacock. Then I've watched the stuff on there. It's pretty good content. It's not enough to like bring out another streamer if you don't want to. But this might be the one because it's just got the notoriety of Rian Johnson. It's Natasha Lyonne. Has a like special ability where she can immediately see if someone's lying or not. And it's like, it's almost a supernatural thing, but they keep it somewhat real where she's just really good at reading people. Mm-hmm. And I really love that because that supernatural ability doesn't help her that much in all of these murders that she's solving. Instead, it's like kind of like she still has to provide evidence. She still has to go into like each murder and everything. And it's a murder of the week. Now there's an overarching thing where she's on the run. But each one is a new murder because she's traveling. So she goes to a new place, solves the murder. And, I mean, each one has new guest stars. Hong Chow is in the second one. Adrian Brody and Benjamin Bratt are in the first one. And I think that it's just really fun. It's incredibly funny. I mean, there's, like, little things where, you know, Hong Chow plays a trucker who's, like, on the road all the time. She's like, well, I do get lonely, but, you know, I've got these books on tape, on CD. That's like just these tiny little needles of like hysterical commentary because Rian Johnson is such a talented writer. Whatever you want to feel about The Last Jedi, I think it's a great movie, but whatever. It's like he's really funny and people forget that because like Last Jedi is a more of a maudlin type of thing. But I really like enjoy like the quick dialogue of this. It's very fun. It's very funny. You know, people like Natasha Lyonne might be considered an acquired taste. I personally adore her. I think she is like she's got a great attitude, a very different one than usual, and she carries this so well. She's basically like a little Columbo kind of person where she's like she's not like a brilliant detective or anything like that, and she's not really a detective at all, but she still like kind of like stumbles upon this stuff and then does get sort of whip smart. She does the Columbo and one more thing like kind of deal, which I really, really like this, and I'm on the third episode already. The first two were a lot of fun. I think, you know, if you're going to, like, get into Peacock, which I think Peacock is growing a little bit, like, a little bit, but this is the time to get it for this show.
I actually can't sign up for Peacock here in Canada. It's blocked me. Yeah, there's a lot.
God bless Canada, because that's smart.
So I gotta wait till this hits something, but it's not going to be it's not gonna be soon. I know that. So it's like there was another Peacock show that came out. Help me.
Paul T. Goldman.
Something that again was like very, very, very like not popular with the masses. And then I didn't get a chance to see it up until like probably about 3-4 weeks ago. Anyway, it'll come back to me, but
I'm trying to pull up real quick. There's so this is going to be a Drag Race reference, but they do what they call the snatch game, and they do impressions. Mm-hmm. And one of the ones that the drag queen that won last season did Natasha Lyonne as part of it. And I'm going to share it real quick. And hopefully this is the right part, but it is funny as hell.
I would love to figure out a Natasha Lyonne impression.
It's the voice is like the part that just, you know, is most challenging, I guess.
Natasha Lyonne, she has a delivery that is like a female version of Ryan Reynolds. Correct me if I'm wrong here. You know exactly how the line is going to be coming out of that person's mouth, and it still makes you laugh and it still lands because it's like that humorous sarcasm. Like you know exactly what's coming off her tongue. Sorry, go ahead. I'd love to see
interesting comparison. Actually, I like
that's a very interesting comparison. I'm sorry, I'm trying to pull it up
as we about that for a little bit now. But yeah, okay.
All right, ready. Here you go.
The award for got the look down. Blank.
See if this is the one. Bitch.
Best bitch. All right, let's go to our celebrities and see what they wrote. Starting with Satan. Are you ready?
We're not there yet.
Yeah.
Now, sorry,
we're looking for bitch. What say you, Satan? Now we're looking for what say you, Satan?
And when I reach out,
I can't find her. I'm sorry. Okay. She's so it's we're looking, there. You go,
Natasha Lyonne.
Yeah,
we're looking for bitch. Do you have a bitch?
No, I said best breeder.
Best breeder.
Bianca's a top. Yeah. And she's also petite.
Oh,
yeah, okay. And tiny tops. It cracks me up.
Yes.
Like, imagine Jada Essence Hall topping Monet Exchange. That would be hilarious to see. You know?
Very like
a 4-year-old trying to move a couch on a rock. You know?
Very specific Drag Race humor, but like the voice and stuff is just spot on.
I mean, she has like a perfect like smoker's borscht belt comedian voice, where it's like she is in a different time when you see her talk, but she's just so freaking cool. And it's so weird to me that, like, you know, her start was, I guess, basically the first time I saw her was American Pie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm like, she was such a different character in that. 100%. I mean, she still had the same voice, but it was like, she was like basically like the like popular sex goddess or sex know-it-all or something like that, which is just like, it's just a weird thing to think about. Like,
is she the one out of that OG American Pie crew who's had the most successful career? Think to yourself about the eight of them. Who do you think?
Well, I was going to say Jennifer Coolidge from the original.
No, I'm talking about the kids. So let's say kids. Biggs, Chris Klein, the kid from a kid in King Arthur's Court, whose name I forgot.
I guess it doesn't right there.
Tara Reid, Mina Suvari, Natasha Lyonne, and Shannon
Elizabeth. I think
Is she? I mean, I think she is.
Scott was like a comet. Like for a while.
Yeah.
Like I think he's got plenty of residuals.
Or Sean William Scott. Yeah, sorry. I forgot about him too. Yeah.
I think you're right then. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, unless the viral sensations of Sharknado with Tara Reid. I interviewed Mina Suvari last year, and there were some interesting, like, you could tell that, like, I think some of them just want to get away from that American Pie stigma, which probably is tough. And we've talked about that with other major fandoms and stuff. Like, it's hard to get away from. Mm-hmm. That but Kurt, do you have a rant or a rave for us?
Oh, that is a great question. I wish I had come prepared, sir. You know what, I'm gonna go back to what we were discussing before, guys. I really, really I loved Too Leslie, and again, it's just such a performance heavy film. Yes, there are obviously kind of copy paste elements to it by director writer Michael Moore Morris, pardon me. But it's still good. Like, it still just lands. I'm so appreciative that, like, and again, I we won't go back to it about the fact that there are people who perhaps lost out on nominations because Andrea Riseborough got this, but I think it's great. I think, guys, for $4.99, anybody who's listening, go check it out on Apple or on Google TV or on Prime. It's worth the hour and a half. It's very, very, very heavy. Obviously, it's about addiction, something that very much resonates with me. So it really kind of struck me to the core there. I was actually writing my review for it last night,
I'm just trying to figure out exactly how I want to word my love and adoration for it. But I think it's great. I think that it's sad that it kind of just puttered out when it came out. Like Sean, you said $27,000, but I'm glad now that it's gaining these legs, because it is a movie that, with a cast that good, but then also a performance that good, it deserves to have eyes on it. So yeah, everybody check out To Leslie. I think it's this hidden gem of last year, and I really, really, really enjoyed it. So
Joe, I think you are going to like it when you see it.
I think so too.
I honestly don't even know what it's about. I'm looking at the summary of it, right? Oh, okay. Yeah.
So woman wins the lottery, and I won't give away too much, but you go from like something that's super joyous and happy in the first like 3 to 4 minutes of it, and it takes a complete left turn. It's a very tough look at alcoholism and mental health and addiction just as a whole. Obviously very heavy things.
And Owen Teague is the son.
And he's not in it for very long, but he's very good in the short amount of time that he's in it.
I also just love Marc Maron's acting career, because, you know, from going from comedian / podcaster. Yeah. And he's just been doing great with acting. And in this one, he does put a little bit of a thick accent on, but, you know, it's fine. It's lovely.
Yeah. Even Allison Janney. She's in it for such a finite amount of time, but the minutes that she is in it make it impactful. In really good, and the back and forth between her and Angela Riseborough are really good in it. There's a couple of moments in this that had me really swelled up with tears.
Oh yeah.
So I think you're gonna like it, Joe. I think you're like, I don't really know what to compare it to, of any of like the, you know, heavy addiction movies that have come out in the last like 3 to 5 years. Like, it's not like A Beautiful Boy. It's not. I don't know what else has come out really in the last couple of years.
Four Good Days.
Four Good Days. It sounded like that.
And a fucking wig.
Diane Warren movies, everybody. Diane Warren.
That was a full circle moment here on the podcast. So.
Owen Teague, the reason he stuck out, I was like, oh, he was announced as the lead in something, and he's going to be playing Caesar's grown-up son Cornelius in the new Planet of the Apes trilogy.
Yep.
Well, there we go.
Motion capturing. I don't know if you see this visually in the background.
Well, I've been watching this for about 45 minutes. The blanket was the first thing to fall off, and then he wrapped himself around, like almost trapped himself with the blanket, and now it's turned into the bed. Yeah.
This is what happens with a 15-week-old puppy who is currently humping his bed.
So. I was going to say, now he's giving it the business.
All right. Well, before we go, the new films this week, it's actually a quiet week, but Wakanda Forever, Black Panther is going to hit Disney Plus on February 1st, and then 80 for Brady hits theaters, and Knock at the Cabin, M. Night Shyamalan return with a film that's based on a book, so he can't fuck it up too much.
Richard D. Go!
Oh my God. Kurt, we want to thank you so much for being here. But before we go, I want to ask what you are up to, what's coming down the road, and give us some promotion so everyone can follow you.
Yeah, guys, Top 5 Film Dive. I've been doing the show. We're going up to our third anniversary coming up next month, awesome. I believe, which is phenomenal. I was saying this to somebody the other day, and they were like, oh, you only did a couple episodes last year. I had a wonderful 2022. I kind of hit the ground running with a few episodes. I had a few interviews, a few directors, so on and so forth, some special episodes. And I got married. And I basically took the whole summer off. And I just really wanted to just focus on those first couple months of marriage and just get settled with my beautiful lady here. And life is great, fellas. I'm so glad to be able to hang out with you guys and be a part of this process. And big things to come. I just released an episode yesterday with Tyler Banark, who you guys both know.
Oh yeah,
he and I did the horror thriller mega movie draft. Check it out; it's fun. It's interesting. And I did my best of 2022 with Guys Bowling last week. And I'm just going to keep trying to churn out episodes as frequently as possible, whether it be weekly, whether it be monthly, who knows, but keep tuning in, guys. I always get great feedback and I'm so appreciative of everybody. So
it was great to have you. Thank you so much. Thanks, for bringing buddy. Up that you slowed down after you got married. Cause I did not do that. I got married recently and I have not really stopped at all.
Sam's listening from the other room. Like, hello.
Oh shit. You're here.
Oh, hey. Yeah. Hey.
She's like, see, Kurt, you're always welcome back. Absolutely. Thanks, great conversation. And it always, I don't want to say, I was going to say surprises me, because that's not the kind way to say that. But it's always a pleasure to dive into a lot of film knowledge. And you definitely bring a lot of that to the table. So it's great to have those conversations and be able to look at what's coming down the road with the crazy 2023 film filmography. Is it fair to call it a filmography so
film
far?
Slate.
Film slate. Let's do that. That's going to... that's before us and is ever changing. So we'll see what happens there. All right. Well, guys, the Oscars are well, a little bit away. We have about a month and two weeks.
I'm going to torture myself over
here. But yeah, Sean, please feel better. And, you know, you need to feel better for March 12th. So
yeah, buddy.
I'm there.
Now, right, wait, hold on a sec, though. Are you guys going to be watching The Last of Us finale or the Oscars that night?
Fuck! Is it really?
They both fall on the same night.
I mean, I'm going to see the Oscars, but
that is the decision that you have 6 weeks to make, but I know what I'm doing.
So. Oscars, but shit.
Hour one of the Oscars, 9 o'clock hits here in Toronto, and I'm throwing on that finale, and then I'm going to watch those last 4.5 hours of the Oscars after that.
It's just been announced as well that The Last of Us is receiving a season two, which I don't think any of us.
Well, they said they want to only do two seasons. Mm-hmm. Who knows if that actually happens or not? Mm-hmm. But they only want to do two seasons, so we'll see what happens there.
Craziness, absolute craziness. We'll see what happens. All right, guys. Well, we have some time to figure that out. Our plans for the 12th. But I think I'm in line with your plans, Kurt. So we'll see what happens. Because I know that I have someone here that will give me the rundown on what happens at the Oscars.
I'll be the one torturing myself there.
Stressed out, pulling your hair out.
Oh God.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
Yep.
The Guy at the Movies podcast is a joint venture between Math Teacher Movies and Guy at the Movies. You can catch new episodes weekly right here wherever you're listening to this one. Subscribe so you never miss a beat.